You are listening to Business Executive Radio EXE, broadcasting live from the beautiful city club of Buckhead. Ladies and gentlemen, we present for your delight today a Business Executive Radio EXE production of the SME Showcase of Atlanta show, where we make thought leaders visible in the hosted talk radio show tradition. This episode is brought to you by Pilot House Advisors, piloting their organization to your vision by transforming, optimizing, and executing. I am executive producer and your announcer today, Heather Thompson, along with our host, Rio Orvec. We welcome you to the Human Resources, Innovation and Change in Processes episode with guest speakers Lisa Gutierrez from Cox Enterprises, Shatanice Reese from Georgia Tech Research Institute, Michael Baus from Equifax, Nancy Lamborn from eVestment, and Heather Laverne from Veenendaal Cave. Listeners, as we refer to each visual, please bring up our speaker's documents at pilothouseadvisors.com and click on the SME Papers tab and select the episode HR Innovation and Change Processes, January 2015. Also, before leaving our show, please vote for your favorite SME speaker today on the SME Awards tab on our website. Let me now introduce our resident SMEologist and the host of our show, Rio Orvec.
Good day, everyone. This is the SME Showcase of Atlanta show, HR Innovation and Change Processes episode, and I am your host, Rio Orvec. We have a fabulous show for you today, packed with subject matter experts updating you with the latest key and critical issues surrounding innovation and change processes within human resources, which are changing and becoming more complex in today's business environment. We have in the studio today Atlanta top thought leaders in the areas of human resources. And our first speaker for today's show is Heather Laverne, HR Manager of Quality Research at Veenendaal Cave, a national interior design firm headquartered here in Atlanta. Heather started as an interior designer and evolved to HR management, with one of her specialties as building intern and onboarding programs. And Heather is active in Shrim events, where we first met. Good morning, Heather. Nice to have you here. And also joining us in the studio today is Shatanice Reese from the talent management team at Georgia Technical Research Institute, with nearly 20 years in human resources. Shatanice also has a master's in HR and French from Iowa State. Bonjour, Shatanice. We are proud to present our next speaker, subject matter expert Michael Baus, a VP of HR Systems and Innovation at Equifax and a 14-year veteran in IT and human resource operations. A warm greeting this morning, Michael. Educating us today, we greet Nancy Lamborn, head of HR for eVestment, a global investor data and analytics software company. Nancy has 20 years in HR leadership roles, is a published author, and has a senior professional HR designation. She's accompanied by Mark Scott in our guest gallery. Thank you for making your time available. And rounding out our discussions will be Lisa Gutierrez, a senior director from Cox Enterprises, and previously Cummins, Los Alamos National Laboratory, and Procter & Gamble. Lisa has been named Diversity Influential by Hispanic Business Magazine. Welcome, Lisa. On behalf of our listeners, thank you all, speakers, for joining us today.
Heather Laverne is the Manager of Human Resources and Quality Research at Veenendaal Cave, an Atlanta-based interior design firm of 81 employees who specialize in the corporate, healthcare, and industrial sectors throughout the United States. She received her bachelor's degree from the Art Institute of Atlanta in Interior Design. She started her career as a designer, but quickly became more interested in assisting and onboarding new designers by helping to create a methodical training experience as well as conducting in-house research for the entire studio. This has since evolved into a more defined HR role, which includes benefits administration, performance reviews, and managing the comprehensive intern program, among many other hats.
Thank you, Heather. And your contribution, Heather Laverne, is going to be on recruiting and training methods, yielding better quality production, lowering turnover, and, of course, most importantly, stabilize cultures. So the first question for you is, what is the most beneficial recruiting tool for your company, and what are your thoughts about using technology in the selection process?
Well, the most beneficial recruiting tool would definitely be our own people. They usually provide the best candidates because they already know the culture. They have like-minded individuals. They know their work habits. And it gives us actually a more accurate vision of whom we'll be hiring. Also, our president, Ed Cave, is very active in the entire process by visiting colleges. He serves as a portfolio judge where he can conduct smaller informal conversations with the students before bringing them in for more formal interviews. And once in the studio, he spends a lot of time touring them and lets them meet the staff, and they get to see the culture firsthand. We also do administer a short work sample quiz just to get an idea of their knowledge that applies to what we do specifically. And lastly, I'd say word of mouth. The design industry is a very small world in Atlanta, and we have plenty of candidates that come from our clients and vendors alike that know what kind of work we produce. We don't really find it necessary at this stage to do anything more technologically based in regards to a selection process. Perhaps one day when we grow to a larger size, that may be something that we get into doing. But for right now, at this stage, it probably would be overkill for us. The face-to-face works a lot better.
All right, thank you. Heather, from your perspective, when someone is brought on board, what is the most significant process that your company uses to assure the success of that new employee?
I would say, hands down, it's our training program. It serves both as a new intern program as well as a new hire program. It's actually very unique in the industry. Most studios don't have such a comprehensive program, so there's no sink or swim. The new hires are given every opportunity to build on what they already know and apply it to the work that we do. We started it years ago in an effort to assist not only the designers, but really the team directors, the project teams, who were finding that the interns and new hires weren't really getting exposed to everything that they needed before they were placed on a team. This can become a liability of sorts, you know, for everyone. Low productivity, not having time to train a junior designer while on a team, and of course the ensuing lack of confidence that a new hire or an intern can feel as a result of all of these things. So we set out to create an 8-week program that covers just about everything they're going to need to know, all in a mock exercise format. They go through the typical life cycle of a project, and while they certainly won't be experts when they're finished, it will give them a chance to learn without that added pressure of having that looming deadline.
Well, thank you for that. And with this training program that you're talking about, it starts with a mock exercise. Hence, how has the training evolved over time, and are you implementing any changes or to innovate or increase this effectiveness?
Well, we try to customize it for the experience level of the new hire. A person with 2 years of experience has a slightly different program than, say, a college student who's starting their first job with us. We teach them the same principles and standards, of course, but with a slightly different mock exercise and a level of review of that exercise. We have recently begun to conduct seminars in addition to the exercises, and this has been a great opportunity for them to ask questions and to have more of a peer forum. We currently utilize our designers and directors to teach these sessions in person, but starting this year, we plan to tape the sessions and create a comprehensive video that can be accessed on demand, and they can be manipulated on the screen so that the student can stop and start and rewind and better control their learning experience.
Well, then, once they've been trained, then. Now, how do you evaluate them?
We evaluate by an informal three-month review of the new hire experience, which includes feedback solicited from the teams that they've worked with directly. We also have them give us feedback on the training process. That way we can stay on top of any changes that we need to make. And, of course, this is all done face-to-face. Now, once someone is on a team more permanently, they do receive the annual review with the principals of the firm as well as their immediate supervisor. One process that we found that works is what we call a 360 review process, which I'm sure you've heard of. We utilize a numerical evaluation. This comes from their peers, comes from management, and they also submit a self-evaluation, and then those numbers are compared to one another. This is in addition to an electronic confidential survey that's given to the teammates. These have more direct, detailed questions in proficiency and growth terms. And all of this information is gathered, compiled, and, of course, discussed in a face-to-face annual review. But we do not limit the review process to just once a year. We're very open, and, in fact, we encourage all employees to solicit feedback and to give feedback at the moment that it's needed. No fancy software required. You know, it's just simple open lines of communication on an ongoing basis so that changes and adjustments can be made and addressed immediately. And that's really when it counts, not every once a year.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. That's an interesting perspective, Heather. You have enlightened our listeners, especially those from the mid-size and specialty markets companies, and we certainly appreciate that. We'll break now for a short announcement from the Georgia Technical Research Institute and return with Shantanese Reese to discuss innovation in human resources, with tips on how you can determine if your company is innovative or just so-so, when we return.
For 80 years, the Georgia Technical Research Institute has been building a reputation as one of the world's premier applied research and development organizations. Each day, GTRI science and engineering expertise is used to solve some of the toughest problems facing government and industry across the nation and around the globe. A nonprofit research institute, GTRI teams with its customers to attack their problems with passion and objectivity. In the fiscal year of 2014, GTRI conducted $363 million in sponsored research for government and industry. Our more than 2,000 expert scientists, engineers, and support staff turn ideas into workable solutions and then put those solutions into action. GTRI's core competencies include test and evaluation, system development, engineering and prototyping, applied electromagnetics and materials research, secure information and communication systems, threat systems research and development, and client-inspired engineering. GTRI also has a long history of solving complex problems in the areas of electronic warfare, modeling and simulation, materials, radar, sensors, optics, digital media, robotics and unmanned systems, cybersecurity and aerospace technologies. Major customers for GTRI research include United States Department of Defense agencies, the state of Georgia, non-defense federal agencies, and private industry.
We are back live in the lovely City Club of Buckhead, overlooking downtown Buckhead Financial District. It's the SME Showcase of Atlanta show. Heather, we would like to know about our next speaker, Shantanese, if you would please.
Shantanese Reese joined the Georgia Tech Research Institute talent management team with nearly 20 years of human resources experience in 2011. As GTRI's diversity consultant, she is responsible for building and managing GTRI's diversity initiatives. Shantanese obtained her Master's of Science in Human Resources and French from Iowa State University and is a certified senior professional in human resources. Throughout her career, she has served as an advisor on HR policies and procedures, managed various internal HR functions, served as a mentor and leader, developed and equipped teams, and exercised strong project management and problem-solving skills. Shantanese describes herself as an innovative, inspiring leader, experienced with fiduciary and fundraising skills. She possesses expert-level knowledge in talent management and training. Shantanese can be reached at 404-407-6223 or shantanese.reese@gtri.gatech.edu.
Thank you for sharing that about Shantanese, Heather. We're live in a studio with Shantanese Reese from Georgia Technical Research Institute. With your very prepared discussion, Shantanese, which will cover HR professionals and talking about innovation and serve as change agents in their companies while continuing to sharpen skills. Let's start with a broad question for you. What is the definition of innovation and change in HR, Shantanese?
The definition of innovation and change in HR centers primarily around processes that are impacted by technology. Some examples include onboarding, performance management, and recruiting. Are these processes smooth or are they difficult to navigate? Technology enables HR to be more efficient and thereby innovative. However, technology is not the only area that impacts innovation and change. How a company responds to workforce demographics also contributes to the definition of innovation and change in HR. People are constantly changing from a diversity perspective, which impacts the way HR professionals approach work. Inclusion is the key word. One clear example is the fact that most businesses are dealing with four generations in the workforce simultaneously. Starbucks dress code, which bans rings with stones, bracelets, wristbands, or how a company uses zombies and wine bars to lure millennials, illustrate various responses companies have chosen to cope with the ever-changing demographics of the workforce. Organizational behavior also impacts the definition of innovation and change. An employee's motivation is key, and how an organization responds is crucial. Employee demographics and motivation are less obvious factors and yet are still very important. Our understanding of psychology and human behavior is constantly changing. As we know, these factors play out in the workforce on a daily basis, and change management must be handled appropriately. As HR professionals, when it comes to addressing issues surrounding technology, workforce demographics, or organizational behavior, our role is to encourage managers to do what may seem to be the exact opposite of what it is needed or what has always been done.
Well, Shantanese, you covered surveys, plans of actions, processes which HR leaders need to consider. Please tell us, what are the skills HR professionals need in order to remain innovative and ready for change in the upcoming years?
In my professional opinion, listening is the key skill an HR professional should possess to remain innovative and ready for change in the upcoming years, both externally and internally. Allow me to explain. As the marketplace changes, HR professionals should remain in the know about upcoming trends, pending legal cases, and technology updates. This is what I mean by listening externally. Additionally, HR professionals need to ensure they are listening to their employees. This allows HR to be strategic. Lastly, and perhaps even more importantly, HR should listen to the changes in their field and ensure they are self-aware. Securing a sponsor or a mentor will assist in remaining self-aware. These individuals can assist with suggestions for ongoing training and serve as sounding boards. Diagnostic skills are also very key to remaining innovative and ready for change. It's so easy to keep one's head down and focus on daily tasks and lose sight of the big picture. When this happens, an HR professional is not able to bring the value to the organization from an HR perspective. Not to sound cliche-ish, but we have to keep our eyes on the horizon and remain big picture focused.
Well, as HR professionals comes to addressing issues surrounding technology, workforce dynamics, or organizational behavior, in the role that is encouraged managers to do what they seem to be exactly opposite of what they need to get done, what is one key and glaring question that really comes to mind is, how can you determine if your company is innovative and able to change?
I believe there are two ways you could determine if your company is innovative and able to change. One is to assess exit interviews, and the other is to assess employee engagement. For example, Does your company offer flexible schedules, have an open-door policy, or ongoing opportunities for growth? If employees do not feel heard, or if it takes too long to hire someone, or to evaluate someone, or to secure funding for a project, these are strong indicators that your company needs improvement in the areas of innovation and change.
We do hope our listeners are in a successful, competitive company and innovative company. What can an HR professional do if they discover that, well, their company is not considered innovative or able to change?
Excellent question. An HR professional should talk to senior leadership if they discover, after analyzing exit interviews and employee engagement surveys, that their company is not considered innovative and able to change. They should not only initiate the conversation, but come prepared to offer solutions and a plan of action. HR is and should be a part of that solution.
Well, Shantanese, now let's go back to the HR professional. How will the talent market challenge HR professionals to be more innovative and change agents in their own companies?
The talent market poses its own set of challenges. HR professionals have to ask themselves, what are the challenges in recruitment in today's economy? Presently, the candidate experience is an important element. Technology is a key factor. Is your company's applicant tracking system clunky? A cumbersome ATS will certainly impact the candidate's experience. How can this be addressed? Maintain an open dialogue with incoming employees. Conduct a focus group with millennials to gain their perspective on the process. These types of focus groups can assist with addressing those issues. You can also talk with mid-career employees. Their concerns may deal with opportunities for growth or taking care of aging parents, whereas the boomers may be more concerned about benefits.
All right, thank you. And for guiding us on how to be more successful at innovation and change. Now please give us a few examples, Shantanese, of who are some of the leaders in the area of innovation and change in human resources.
You know, in most cases, the leaders are not necessarily deemed HR professionals. Authors such as Sheryl Sandberg or Marcus Buckingham are examples of leaders who not only challenge us to think innovatively and to be nimble for business, but also inspire us to be better people. Steve Pemberton, one of the top 20 chief diversity officers in corporate America, is another leader in the arena of innovation and change in HR due to his ability to encourage audiences to think of diversity in a new way. These are just a few examples of individuals who are seen as leaders in the arena of innovation and change in HR.
Well, merci, Shantanese. We can tell you're a subject matter expert on the leading edge of innovation. Thank you for coming out today and sharing your experiences with us.
Not a problem.
Let's take a short break to hear from a great cause for us locally in Atlanta. And we'll be returning to visit with Michael Bowes, a SME in technical HR systems and innovations. Michael will cover the hot issues in human resource technology, such as mobile human capital management technologies, leveraging big data and analytics for more effective use of talent, and the new trend of self-service-driven HR technologies. All when we return. Stay tuned.
The East Lake Foundation of Atlanta, Georgia helps families build better lives and children reach their highest potential through its holistic approach to community revitalization, incorporating mixed income housing, cradle to college education, and community wellness. Established in 1995, the foundation turned the East Lake community into a national model for redevelopment that has evolved into being a great neighborhood in its own right. By working with residents and expert public and private partners, the foundation now provides comprehensive programs, including the East Lake Family YMCA and the First Tee of East Lake, a year-round golf instruction and life skills program for area youth. People of all ages and incomes seeking a sense of community are attracted to what East Lake readily offers. This holiday season, please join the foundation for their 11th annual toy party and silent auction at the America's Mart on December 7th from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. This holiday cocktail party and fundraiser aims to collect 5,000 plus toys for Georgia children in need. We ask that you bring a toy valued at $20 or more and a $5 donation. The silent auction will feature more than 200 items, including art, travel, dining, health and fitness, and much more. For more information, please contact Elizabeth Cuney at ekuney@eastlakefoundation.org. We're located at 2606 Alston Drive Southeast, Atlanta, Georgia, 30317, and can be reached at 404-373-4351.
And you are returning to the Human Resources episode of the SME Showcase Show, broadcasting live on Business Executive Radio, EXE. This is your host, Rio Orvec, with announcer Heather Thompson. Heather, can we hear a little bit about Michael Bowes, our next speaker?
Michael Bowes is the Vice President of HR Systems and Innovation at Equifax Incorporated. He has 14 years of experience in the information technology and human resources operations space, as well as experience developing and implementing global HCM solutions. He recently led the deployment of Workday Global HCM at Equifax, with continuing deployment of new Workday functionality, mobile, time tracking, onboarding, and recruiting, to meet global HCM needs.
Thank you, Heather. Now let's meet our esteemed guest, Michael Bowes from Equifax. We are pleased to have you in the studio today, Michael. Let's have a discussion around your perspective on human capital management technologies. Michael, let's start with something that is changing the human resource industry, actually. Behind the scenes, something most of us are not really aware of, but that's in transition from on-premise or company-owned and operated technologies for human capital management systems, which is the software and hardware that we're all semi-familiar with, to SaaS. And SaaS is being defined as software as a service from providers. So, Michael, how has the conversion changed from customized specific needs for managing employees' information, which companies that have built into their systems switched over to configuration of those specific information needs within the SaaS environment, software environment, which affects how HR systems users, management, and HR IT have to deal with? How has the conversion changed?
Yeah, I think what we're starting to see in the industry is probably just a follow-on of what's already been happening in other industries. And now in the HR space, we're starting to see a lot of companies, including my own, navigate away from a lot of the expensive on-premise technologies that cost a lot from an infrastructure perspective, from a resource perspective, with IT professionals that have to support those infrastructure items, databases, servers, those types of things. There's an extensive investment in both the functional and IT support resource space for customizations. Those customizations usually involve a lot of personal knowledge for those resources that develop those customizations. And when those resources leave an organization, a lot of times that knowledge on those customizations leaves with them. So the support becomes extremely difficult. There's a lot of disaster recovery and business continuity work that goes on with an on-premise solution that a lot of the SaaS providers can take that headache away from you. And again, it's basically a non-value add in a lot of cases to the core business model for a company when they're developing their own software for internal processes sometimes. So you're seeing a big shift to configuration in this SaaS space, less infrastructure to really support it. The ability for companies to adapt and change very quickly to business needs, mergers and acquisitions, the ability to board employees and do that globally in multilingual situations, the reduction in IT support needs, and both on the functional side as well in some cases, because now you're not supporting the customizations, you're supporting configuration. You're getting more upgrades, more feature functionality is being delivered quickly in these SaaS environments, and so you're seeing a lot of companies take advantage of that. And again, I think it's about the global orientation. A lot of the SaaS providers these days have the ability to meet those needs globally. So you're seeing a pretty dramatic shift, and again, I think HR is following a lot of the other spaces and industries that have already taken that that trip. Mm-hmm.
And let's cover the next issue, Michael, a very hot trend in the tech industry, mobile usage. How are companies addressing the needs of managers and employees that are on the go with mobile technologies related specifically to human capital management systems?
Sure. I think it's pretty easy when you look around the room. Everybody's got an iPhone. Everybody's got some type of phone. Everybody's got an iPad or some type of tablet that they're keeping with them. And managers and employees both are on the go, right? And so it's about meeting our employees really where they are to service their needs when it comes to HR transactions, HR systems, and HR functionality. I think we're providing more self-service these days to our managers and employees via the HR systems. And when you're doing that, it's more important than ever that you provide them with those tools where they can access it mobily. Most of the HCM applications that are out there today are offering some type of mobile feature functionality to meet people where they are so they can get their work done quickly. And sometimes in this day and age, there's a need to do that on the go in an airport, in a cab ride, at home with your family. So we're basically putting data in the user's fingertips when they need it, where they need it the most.
Michael, enlighten us on how are companies leveraging big data, which can be explained as large volumes of data from many sources. How are they leveraging this to uncover information about their businesses and their workforce, which they can leverage for more effective use of talent?
Sure. I think big data is definitely a term that most people are familiar with these days, especially in the HR space. It is so much data that has been created and so much data that is continuously being created that can help us in this war for talent with employees, right? Everybody's trying to attract and retain some of the top critical talent that you need in your business. And the way that you do that and that you attract those folks and you actually keep them is by analyzing data. And the data can come from a lot of different places. It could be from LinkedIn profiles. It can be from other data sources. But the data that's out there, it's critical. If you're going to win, you need to be able to analyze that data and make some good business decisions and insightful decisions based on that data. We look at things like potential ratings and performance ratings, retention, looking at locations. We look at professional profiles. We're trying to tie all of that together, and it's definitely a challenge, but it's necessary if you're going to win some of the battles in this war for talent today.
All right. Thank you for that. And, Michael, what is the next subject that we're going to talk about? What as users, we're concerned with the push for better user experience in HCM technology, which we assume is accelerating quickly, then why is it necessary to adopt intuitive, self-service-driven technologies to advance HCM initiatives?
Sure. I think with HR organizations today, they're pushing very hard for managers and employees to have as much self-service as they can. We want to make sure that folks can handle the transactions themselves. And we're really trying to see a push from tactical work being handled by a lot of the strategic HR business partners into more strategic work. So we're putting some of that information, those forms, that self-service in the hands of managers. The user experience is critical because now if you're relying on a manager who's only going to create a job requisition two or three times a year to create that job requisition, that process needs to be extremely easy. We need people to get in, get it right, and get out of those systems. Because when they're inside the HR system, they may not be doing their core function, which may be sales or doing something else for your business that is more valuable from a time perspective for them. And so I think that's one of the keys is that user experience has to be intuitive. You can't spend a lot of time trying to teach people how to use the product. The product should be intuitive enough that they can learn it and open that transaction, finish it, and get out of the system as quickly as they can.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And that begets our next question, Michael. What is the impact on the move to a more self-service HCM environment for an organization, and how does that conversion transition change work with the employee?
Yeah, I think with self-service, the self-service process kind of replaces the conversation that a lot of, say, HR partners or HR generalists have traditionally had with managers and employees. They're now having a manager or employee engage inside of the system itself for that transaction, and so the conversation is happening there. That means that those in-person discussions that were being had need to be followed up with or aligned with transactions in the system that are solid, the instructions are tight, validation is spot on when you're going through a process, and the user experience has to be excellent. Workflow has to be extremely transparent. People need to know where they are in a transaction, and they know what's next, who's up next to approve or review something. The other thing is notifications that go out and confirmations. Those need to be spot on as well. People need to know where they stand once something is completed in the system. So I think that, again, that user experience is key in just about everything that we do today.
Sure. Well, Michael, as users are familiar with trending in social media, and most of us in the corporate world know what analyzing data is, so that if analytics and trending are important to every organization at some level, how are companies leveraging user-friendly reporting, dashboards, workforce planning to help involve and inform human capital decisions?
Yeah, I would tell you that in the old days, analytics and metrics were something that was an extreme nice to have. It's a must have today. You can't win in the war for talent today if you don't have data and analytics in the HR space. And a lot of companies you're starting to see are mining not only their data, but their data scientists and data analysts, and bringing them into the HR organization where traditionally they've been outside, maybe in an operations role or in a finance and accounting role. You know, things that you want to know with this war for talent: are you paying people adequately? Are we paying for performance? Do we really have a meritocracy? You know, why are people leaving us? Where do we have capacity with workforce planning? Where do we have business continuity issues with, say, people retiring that are in critical business roles or retiring within the next few years? You have to know where you are, and you have to know where you want to go, and you've got to measure that, and that's extremely important. Predictive analytics, helping businesses understand what decisions they need to make to impact their strategy, their talent strategy as they move forward, is critical. And bottom line is you have to commit to analytics and data. It is definitely the way to help win this war for talent.
Yeah, thank you for that, Michael. Thank you for representing the technical side of our discussions today. We're surely grateful for you coming in and looking at technology for us, and we'll love to hear your summary.
Thank you.
I would like now to turn you over to a message from a very fine organization for a few minutes, which helps nonprofits and can actually help you make your contributions easier: the Georgia Center for Nonprofits. And when we return, we will spend some time with Nancy Lanborn from eVestments, named one of Atlanta's top companies to work for a peek into its hiring processes, innovative culture, and how they foster innovation. Stay with us at the SME Showcase of Atlanta show.
Georgia Center for Nonprofits. There's plenty to take care of in nonprofits: business and strategic planning, finance and accounting, fundraising and development, governance and boards, human resources, leadership, management, marketing and communication, public policy and advocacy, volunteer management. For more than 20 years, GCN, Georgia Center for Nonprofits, has served as a cornerstone of support for Georgia's nonprofit and philanthropic community by delivering a wide range of services and support. Our members span the nonprofit world in scale and scope, from international organizations to corporate philanthropies, foundations, and community initiatives. The mission of Georgia's Center for Nonprofit is to build thriving communities by helping nonprofits succeed. Through a powerful mix of advocacy, solutions for nonprofit effectiveness, and insight-building tools, Georgia Center for Nonprofits provide nonprofits, board members, and donors with the tools they need to strengthen organizations that make a difference on important causes throughout Georgia. GCN membership provides comprehensive support to more than 1,200 organizations and 5,000 professionals through exclusive access to landmark research, publications, and in-depth online content, cost-saving opportunities, and events throughout the year. Become a business member and
welcome back to the SME Showcase of Atlanta show, live from the City Club of Buckhead. And now, Heather, we would like to understand our next speaker's background, Nancy Lanborn.
Nancy Lanborn is the head of human resources for eVestment, a global leader in institutional investor, asset manager, and hedge fund data and analytics software. In the 5 years she has been with eVestment, the company has grown from 45 employees in Atlanta to 287 employees in 6 offices around the world. During this time, the company has been named to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Best Workplaces list and the Atlanta Business Chronicle's Top Workplaces. Prior to eVestment, Nancy spent 20 years in human resources leadership roles at several commercial insurance brokerage houses in the Metro Atlanta area and had several articles published. She obtained her Senior Professional in Human Resources designation in 2009 and holds a bachelor's degree in human resources management.
Thank you, Heather. Another thing worth noting is eVestment has appeared on Inc. magazine's list of the fastest-growing private companies in America for 8 consecutive years, and in 2015 continued its international expansion with its newest office opening in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Nancy is joining us today to talk about some innovative processes eVestment has in place to help hire and retain top talent during eVestment's rapid growth. Now let's meet our guest, Nancy Lamborn from eVestment. Welcome, Nancy.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Now let's have your perspective on human resource innovation with our first question, and that is, eVestment has been growing very fast in the past few years. Tell me some of the most innovative HR processes you've implemented to help find and retain top people, Nancy.
Well, we ended up hiring about 100 people in 2014, which about doubled our workforce, and we anticipate hiring another 80 to 100 people again in 2015. And with the growth of the company, one of the areas we really needed to innovate was in recruiting. So our recruiting process is very deliberate and very hands-on. We interview for cultural fit that we consider to be as critical as job qualifications. Part of that includes peer-to-peer and team interviews. Candidates will interview with between 5 and 10 of their potential leaders and coworkers. And we usually want 100% agreement on a candidate before we will move ahead to hire. We do place a huge emphasis on fit, both for us and for the candidate. The smartest person isn't going to be successful in a culture that they don't enjoy. So it's crucial for us to have a job fit and a culture fit. We approach the hiring process with low attrition specifically in mind, and we're very deliberate about our candidate experience, from the greeting, the tour of the office, to the follow-up and the closure. We want employees to really see what it's like to work at eVestment by experiencing that firsthand. Every candidate gets a response from us, so they all know where they stand in the process. And we find that candidates appreciate the follow-up, and even if they didn't get the position, we hope that they speak highly of our firm to others in the community when the process is over. Our process to apply online is fast. It takes under 4 minutes. And all resumes that come into the building that we receive are personally reviewed by an individual. We don't choose to use algorithms or automated keyword selections to find our candidates. This innovation to a more hands-on, high-touch approach may seem counterintuitive today, as the trends are clearly moving towards much more automation, but the costs of hiring the wrong person or not getting the top candidate into your applicant pool, we find them to be enormous.
Well, we've talked about technology with Michael, the broad effects of HR technology. In the world of technology is changing so quickly, Nancy, can you tell us about your HR processes to help employees continue to innovate?
Sure. Innovation is actually one of our company's 6 core values, and we recruit specifically for innovation, and it's a critical part of the company's daily interactions. Fostering an innovative culture starts in the recruiting process, and because we want to continue to foster this environment where innovation is encouraged, we ask specific interview questions that allow us to see the more creative or innovative side of candidates. We ask for specific examples of situations that they've solved in an innovative way, and then we try to determine how comfortable they are with thinking outside the box and taking risk.
All right. Well, Nancy, once employees are on board, how do you help them foster the innovation?
Our leadership team actually fosters creativity and innovation all across the organization, encouraging everyone to take risk, and then more specifically with company-wide programs and events. For example, at our 2013 annual meeting, our leaders handed out poker chips to symbolize for people that they have the power to put a chip down and make a decision on a bet or a project or a decision that they were passionate about. And a more programmatic effort to foster innovation is our own internal Shark Tank-style competition. On company time, teams of investment employees worked up ideas for product extensions or new product concepts and pitched them to the company leadership team. And even myself and members of my team were able to participate. And we were able to spend company time focused on multiple areas of the business and throw out ideas without a lot of constraints. And the winning project actually gets produced and rolled out, and the winning team gets to participate in profits generated by that product. We also allow time for innovative special projects, or what we call 10% projects. Employees get allocations of unstructured time where they can ask the what-if questions, and then they're given time to create new products or business concepts from the answers. And the best ideas are funded and incubated and have actually become an important source of innovation at our company. And I think people innovate and excel if you expect them to and you create an environment that encourages this behavior. There's a story that's been around for a while about a naive young teacher who was assigned to the worst classroom of underperforming students in her school, and mistaking a list of their locker numbers for their IQ numbers, this teacher treated these students as if they were brilliant. So the story goes that because she expected them to perform at superior levels, they rose to that level of expectation and performed extremely well. I think it's the same when you have an environment that has an expectation of innovation. There's a prevailing sense of freedom to question why, and if people can routinely take the liberty of trying a better way, then innovation becomes an expected part of that culture.
Well, profit participation gets people's attention. So how does recognition go into fostering an innovative culture and keeping people engaged?
Well, at eVestment, we're very liberal with recognition because people just respond really well to that. People want to work at a company and stay there where their efforts and the efforts of their teammates are recognized. For us, for example, whenever we close a new client, the lead salesperson actually sends an email to the entire company highlighting the new customer, the size of the deal, and specifically naming everyone who was involved in putting that deal together. And that list includes people from marketing, technology, product development, legal, and contracts, not just people on the sales team. So that way, everyone feels invested in the success of the sales cycle, and they see the part that they play. We also have a series of annual Founders Awards that are peer-nominated, and they're given out around the company's six core values. Those are innovation, excellence, focus, integrity, teamwork, and humility and attitude. And after the awards are announced and presented, the CEO sends an email to the entire company highlighting everyone who was nominated, not just the winners, but to ensure that even if someone didn't win, employees who were nominated are still given recognition for the work they did that exemplified those specific company values.
Thank you, Nancy, for rounding out our viewpoints here today. We appreciate your time and appearance in the studio. I would like now to turn you over to a message from a very fine organization for a few moments, CFY Atlanta, an educational nonprofit that is powering a new generation of learning. And when we return, we will be talking with Lisa Gutierrez for her in-depth viewpoint of how you know you have moved the needle in the innovation of diversity and inclusion. And then our famous Round Robin Summary segment featuring all of today's subject matter experts. Stay tuned.
Our country has a crisis in education equity, as low-income students often have second-rate learning experiences compared to their wealthier peers. CFY Atlanta is an educational nonprofit dedicated to helping these students, together with their teachers and families, harness the power of digital learning to improve their educational outcomes. CFY partners with high-poverty school communities to deliver digital learning services that are people-centered, meaning when digital learning helps increase the quality of face-to-face interactions among students, teachers, and parents. By providing teachers with embedded coaching and students and their parents with a free computer, educational tools, training and support, CFY works to ensure that students in low-income communities have similar first-rate learning experiences to their peers in wealthier communities. As a result of CFY's programs, parents are empowered to support their children's learning, and teachers are able to create dynamic 21st century classrooms that address individual students' needs. As students thrive and take ownership of their learning, students' achievement soars. CFY work would not be possible without significant support from the local business community. To learn how to get involved with their important work, visit www.cfy.org/Atlanta.
It is your host, Rio Orvec, with announcer Heather Thompson and our top subject matter expert speaker panel on the Human Resource episode of SME Showcase of Atlanta. Heather, can you enlighten us on our next subject matter expert, Lisa Gutierrez?
Indeed. As Senior Director of Diversity and Inclusion for Cox Enterprises, Lisa Gutierrez serves as a strategic thought partner to all the Cox divisions specifically in creating and implementing their diversity and inclusion strategies, developing practices and processes to attract and retain diverse talent, promoting inclusion throughout the organization, and leveraging diversity to deliver on the Cox commitment to people, community, customers, and vendors. In addition to launching her own consulting firm, LG Strategies, LLC, she served as the Executive Director of Global Diversity at Cummins Incorporated, where she led all global diversity and inclusion functions and strategies, including internal consulting, education, and communication for 50,000 employees in more than 50 countries. Under Gutierrez's leadership, Cummins was recognized by external organizations for its commitment to diversity, including earning a spot on Diversity Incorporated's top 50 list from 2007 to 2012, a 100% rating on the Corporate Equality Index from the Human Rights Campaign from 2006 to 2012, diversity best practices, and other global organizations focused on diversity, inclusion, and work environment issues. In 2011, Gutierrez was named as one of the diversity influentials by Hispanic Business Magazine. Before joining Cummins, Gutierrez worked for the University of California's Los Alamos National Laboratory, LANL. As Diversity Office Director, she had the opportunity to innovate a number of roles, including researching, developing, and advising leaders on key strategies and actions to improve and sustain morale, productivity, and career development. In addition, Gutierrez worked for Deloitte Consulting, where she inaugurated two positions as the Central Region Learning Director and Diversity Programs Director for the Americas. Gutierrez's background also includes more than 13 years at Procter & Gamble in a wide variety of assignments, encompassing both line and staff functional experience in five different industries. Gutierrez earned a BS degree in Marketing and Organizational Management from the University of Colorado at Boulder. A native of New Mexico, she devotes her free time to family, which includes her beagle, Cola, friendships, personal coaching, and lifelong learning. She has traveled extensively, both within the United States and abroad.
And we welcome Lisa today, also with in our gallery, Elizabeth Olmsted from Cox Enterprises. And Lisa, as we discussed before the show, HR is your game, diversity and inclusion is your fame. So beyond your bio, how can you explain what you do to others? Share your elevator pitch with us, if you would.
So first of all, thanks for inviting me to this dialogue. I've enjoyed listening to everybody else. I'm blessed to have a day job doing what I love, and for the first time having my dog's name mentioned on the radio makes me happy. So there you are. What I do really in a nutshell is connect the dots between phenomenal individuals, their different backgrounds, their amazing brains, their ideas, and figure out ways to leverage those ideas for an organization's overall mission or vision. If I could change my title, I'd actually rename myself the Senior Director of Gray. since, quite frankly, D&I work is really about the gray areas, and it's always about trying to find, you know, that connection or the and between things. So an example, when Michael spoke about data and analytics, it's really about how do you leverage data and analytics and still move the diversity strategy forward. I believe and know all people at all levels of an organization have so many great ideas, but they might not always have the opportunities to unleash their talents or those ideas. So with this positive assumption and intention, I try to find ways to help leaders, managers, and employees unleash those talents.
Well, Lisa, many times successful people rise above circumstances and form characters, and that affects what they do. So how did you get into this work?
It's kind of interesting, and when we were talking earlier, almost all of us kind of have a hybrid background. We started somewhere else and now ended up in this current day job. I started actually as sales and as a salesperson and had a sales background, and actually how I got into the D&I field was when I was at Procter & Gamble, they needed some diverse people to go tell other people what was going on in that culture. And I was the only Hispanic in sales at a certain point as a senior leader. But I was a young employee, and they kept bringing me in for diversity training. Now I was being measured on sales quota. So the actual impact of that great D&I training, I actually went and staffed 6 training sessions, had a negative impact on my sales because I'd come back to the field, and I still had the same quota, but I had 12 less days to affect those sales. And it was at that point that I started wondering, what does that have to do with my sales, and is there a way to do this D&I thing differently? What also played a role in that was, at the time, for a number of years, I was the only woman. I was the only minority or person of an underrepresented background. I was the youngest. I was single. I had no children. And I was working with all men, mostly white males that were awesome, but they were married. They had partners that stayed at home. And a lot of it was we didn't know how to connect. What they did was they taught me that they trusted my sales results, and that led to conversations in other areas. So back in the day, remember sexual harassment training? They hated it, and they said, why do I have to go do that sexual harassment training? And then they'd come to me, and they'd go, you're a woman. Tell me why we have to do that. And I'd have to think about how do I get them to want to do that. And so I'd ask them, I said, would you want your daughters to work in this environment right now, the way it is? And all of a sudden they said, no. And then they went to the training. And it was later on that they started asking me for advice, how do we do this? You know, if my issue is developing sales in Hispanic markets, what does that mean, Lisa? So the root of this learning, though, ultimately was my father and my parents in New Mexico. And they put us in different schools, and they really taught us to excel in various contexts that were new to me or our family. I was the first person to get a college degree. So this ability to shift and adapt to different cultures, different people, prepared me for working in various companies, industries, businesses, and with people from all over the world. And that's when I fell in love with it.
Oh, thank you for that. Given your background, how has it influenced your approach to leading diversity and inclusion strategies in your previous experiences and now with Cox?
So this is why it's always intriguing talking about this topic, because even at this point in my career, people still say things like, what is diversity? So it's kind of fun. Similar to working in sales, what I really do is I look for the pattern or the rhythm of how people really, really do their work or want to do the work. And then I figure out ways to integrate D&I or diversity and inclusion into those business strategies. I found that that works much more successfully than trying to, make D&I as a standalone strategy. It's more sustainable. So an example is when I left my previous company, they're still getting awards based on the strategies, and they've not replaced me at that level, and that's really because a lot of the strategies have been integrated into other processes and systems. So for me, that's really a piece of the success. The rhythm of the company, so if you take my background, Procter & Gamble's rhythm was around consumer sales and marketing, so I had to put a lot of my strategies into that language. At Deloitte, the language around client service and consulting, you switch the language. When I worked at Los Alamos, that's an R&D kind of language, so it's working with 5,000 physicists that look at you and say, or PhDs that look at you and say, what's that D&I stuff anyway? At Cummins, their language is Six Sigma. So I had to build in D&I into an engineering and Six Sigma language. And then now at Cox, which I love, but we have five different organizations and subcultures, different companies like Cox Communications, like Cox Media Group, like Cox Automotive, and Cox Enterprises. So we've got 5 or 4 different cultures that we have to kind of think about. What does D&I mean? So for me, that sales background really helped me look at it look at my customer, look at the context and say, how do we really do it?
Oh, well, thank you very much for that. We've covered innovation in many areas of HR in today's show. So let's do this for diversity and inclusion. Lisa, what does innovation look like for HR and diversity and inclusion?
Okay, so this is going to be my favorite question because I'm going to give you some actual business examples, but sometimes people think I'm crazy, so hopefully I'm not. So what's innovative right now in the diversity and inclusion field, or this industry really, is quite frankly connecting it more tightly and more clearly to the business of a company or of an organization. So it's really starting with that thing. At Cox, a lot of our business is in communications. It's also in the automotive industry, but it's really leveraging a lot of data and analytics. So you have to think like that. It's also about, in Cox Communications, for example, it's around telecom, and it's around data and internet. So a lot of things we're thinking about is how does D&I ultimately help those components of the business? And you kind of start from there, and then you start asking yourself questions, what kind of people do I need? So using this definition of innovating within the D&I field, I've been innovating within this field simply by connecting diverse ideas and solutions in helping companies make money and reduce costs. And I've been doing it, again, I come back to that sales background because I was thinking, how does this really help my sales, my day job? That connection for me has helped to move the discussion forward so that D&I isn't just about that person or that diversity training. It's also about how to leverage that amazing person's brain for positive impact on products, on services, on clients, on customers, on communities and partners, as well as that individual themselves. I keep finding more individuals that say, like Nancy mentioned, her shark style kind of thing. There are people in an organization just saying, I've got an idea. How do I tell somebody about it? So for me, it's about the intersections. So let me give some specific examples. At P&G, one of our challenges back in the day with grocery stores was really, I was living in California at the time in that region, there was a growth of Asian grocery stores in Hispanic bodegas or Hispanic grocery stores. A lot of our business in the traditional stores, think of the Kroger's, was going down in some of these areas, and suddenly people are saying, how do we get that business? Well, by integrating some of the cultural learning on how to sell. So we taught salespeople how to go in and acknowledge the elder in an Asian grocery store. We actually increased sales in those areas. One of my favorites in terms of saving costs was Procter & Gamble was about to send out a Pringles, a forced communications kind of program, a marketing program, and it was in Spanish. When you translated it into English, it basically said, get sick with Pringles. We caught that before they sent it out, because by then they started leveraging our employee. We had an employee resource group. So by preventing that from going out, it's actually saved the company $2 million. That led to the marketing people wanting to leverage this employee resource group called the Western Multicultural Resource at the time. So it's a great example of leveraging employees, right, because they were from Cuba, they were from Puerto Rico, they were from Mexico, they're from the United States like I am, but they had different ways and different terminology. At Cox Automotive, one of my favorite examples recently is, so if you don't know what we do with Manheim, we actually help dealers sell cars and maneuver cars in the dealer space. We leveraged a new business called Go Auto Exchange, which it looks at helping smaller dealers that don't have big dealerships to sell cars at between the $5,000 and $7,000 level. That's in Arizona. The leader there realized he needed a leader that spoke Spanish and Farsi because a lot of small dealers are Iranian or from Persian background and also Hispanic background. He had to find somebody that could do that. And so I'm thinking Spanish and Farsi, how interesting. But it created a new line of business for us. And then at Kelley Blue Book, I'll share this. They really are leveraging the hackathon idea, but they've done that a couple years in a row, and they've taken all 400 employees or so in California, and they allow them to really look at any process, any product, any service, break it, and they're actually implementing about 11 of those ideas every year, or they did it for the first year. So for me, it's a great idea of seeing people, seeing their ideas, and then applying them to the business of what you're doing in a day job.
Oh, thank you for that. Lisa, now let's get to the needle question. What do you think should be measured in your field? And how do you know when you've moved the needle in diversity and inclusion?
So this is interesting because when you say the word diversity, traditionally, And historically, most people automatically think about representation and counting heads, if you will. How many women do we have? How many people of this background, of this demographic? But I think about measuring not only in that way, which is counting heads, but in also how do you make heads count, or how do you really measure that productivity or measure brain space, if you will. And I keep thinking about this quote from Einstein. He said, not everything that can be counted counts. And not everything that counts can be counted. So an example is you can feel when people respect you, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But can you prove it?
No.
You can't, right? So it's those kinds of things. So what's innovative right now is in terms of this field is measuring productivity and measuring return on investment similar to other business results. So it's thinking about, like what Nancy said, if you're, you know, normally you'd be measuring how many people do you recruit in, is that automated system helping us bring in bunches of resumes? What she's also building in is the productivity cost of transitioning people or letting people go if they're not a fit, right? You probably have to pay, exit things, if you will, like, you know what I'm talking about, which is helping them, what do you call
sure.
that? You know, that when they leave and you're giving them some funds to kind of move to their next...
Severance out.
Severance,
yeah,
when you go to severance. Mm-hmm. So there's cost to those kinds of things.
Sure.
So a lot of what we're doing now is really a ways... Another example is measuring the number of people you connect with and across how many levels. Hmm. So an example might be is you might be a senior leader, but you might naturally spend most of your day working with other senior leaders. You could measure the amount of connections you're making to talk with people at different levels. So one of the things is diversify your go-to group. If your go-to are those top four people to check your ideas, what would happen if you went and talked to the front line? A vice president of manufacturing in a previous organization, I asked him this, and his natural rhythm was to go top down. You go talk to his leaders below him and then whatever. He reversed it and went and talked to the front line employees first and found out some different perspectives from them and then still talked to the leaders. So that's another way to move it. Another one is really thinking about measuring ideas and measuring the impact of those ideas. So an example is in every place, and at Cox I found 8 instances, solid instances with leaders that are leveraging diversity and are actually saving money or bringing in new lines of business beyond the one I mentioned with Cox Automotive. And that's real dollars. You can see that in bringing in a new emerging piece of business. So the last thing I just want to say is that I know that I've moved the needle when employees and products really mirror the communities and when the employee chatter is there. So you'll hear it. A lot of times, one of the measures I had in another organization was you need less recruiters because employees are recruiting for you. And then another thing is proactively. One of the things I was thinking about when Michael mentioned the data analytics, for me, another measure is when other organizations proactively come towards you. And so at Cox, we have an organization, the IT organization, is actually funding a predictive and data analytics project for D&I.
Interesting.
To really think about how to visualize D&I. And they're doing it with their own budget, their own money. Yay!
Mm-hmm.
So
nice.
That's success right there.
That means they believe it.
Yeah, and that they're willing to think differently about how do you provide information and data to HR people as they're thinking about integrating diversity strategies into their work.
All right. Well, that was very interesting. In conclusion, one last question, Lisa. Mm-hmm. Do you have any recommendations for our listeners that are HR professionals?
Yeah, when I think about it, the biggest thing I've seen in my years doing this is there's a fear of doing D&I work because people think they need to be actually an expert in it. And the irony is that if people really, most people know how to do business strategy in their you know, function or whatever. So what I try and do is make D&I, integrate D&I into that way of doing business. So make it a business strategy, not just necessarily a people strategy. So think about that. And then this is from my UK friends. They say, give it a go. Give it a go. Just give it a go. Start working on it just like you would with any other strategy and be flexible. The other recommendation I made, and we talked about this earlier with the other panelists, was know your industry and get to know all the businesses. Again, Cox has different businesses. So for me, well, within my first 3 months, I went and visited a Mannheim auto auction because I couldn't even visualize what that looked like. It was totally foreign to me from my background. In 9 hours... watching how people maneuvered, no safety incidents. They were so customer-focused. Everybody was having fun. I was talking to customers, and I said, why do you like this? They go, it's great. I get to see my friends. I get to network. But I learned more about a core component of Cox's business, which are auto auctions, in that 9 hours by going to the auction rather than reading about it or staying in my office. And I think that's a challenge for HR folks. Sometimes we stay in our office too much, and we try to impose strategies that may not flow in the business because you don't understand the business. And then lastly, I'd say, see if someone already has your idea and might be working on them or working on pieces of it rather than assuming that yours is so fresh and brand new. So I'm always collaborating and networking, and that's why you find people that are doing pieces of D&I work, but they don't think they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lisa, thank you. Muchas gracias for your help with a great viewpoint on diversity and inclusion perspective. We are honored to have you here today and learn from you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Coming up next, our famous round robin summary segment, hitting summaries from all of our subject matter experts here today. But first, we will hear from a wonderful, impacting local organization, the Feed the Homeless Project.
Feeding the Homeless Project is a local, non-denominational, faith-based effort to address the plight of homeless men and women on the streets of Atlanta. Their dual purpose is to bring attention to this plight and provide an organization where volunteers can become directly involved in the preparation and feeding of the less fortunate that exist on the edge of our society. What started out as a grassroots project has evolved into a 501c3 nonprofit organization. They are able to accept charitable donations and use them to deliver hot meals, emotional support, and camaraderie to those men and women directly on the streets, wherever the need is greatest. Participating in the weekly Saturday morning serving events are for individuals and groups alike. One thing is for certain, you won't soon forget this meaningful experience. For more information on how to get involved or to donate, go to www.fthpinc.org or call Tim Farley at 404-682-3409 or 404-451-8552.
You are listening to the SME Showcase of Atlanta show, broadcasting on Business Executive Radio EXE. From the magnificent 19th floor conference room overlooking resplendent downtown Buckhead, atop the City Club of Buckhead. We're back in the studio for our wrap-up segment covering the topic of innovation and change in HR processes. In our show's classic style, we'll go around the table of our distinguished subject matter experts for a short summary of their points of discussion. We will start with you, Heather Laverne, from Vinandal Cave. In a few words, please highlight your thoughts, please.
Absolutely, thanks. I believe that our approach to training and investing in employees right from the start has been one of the best processes that we have found for keeping our staff engaged and productive. And it really doesn't have to be anything difficult or tedious. I don't think you want to blindly drive innovation for the sake of innovation. I think just a solid roadmap of what they need to do to get where they need to be through comprehensive training and onboarding, as well as open communication on an ongoing basis. I believe, and I think we as a company believe, this almost always translates into a positive work environment, a highly skilled and intentional workforce, and ultimately a successful company, which is what I think we all are shooting for.
All right. Well, thank you with that, and thank you for coming in the studio today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, Shantanese Reese, your summary thoughts, please, for our listeners.
Thank you, Rio. As I mentioned earlier, technology is a key factor in determining if your company is innovative and has the ability to change quickly. In addition to technology, a company should also monitor its response to workforce demographics and those changes. Inclusion is definitely the key word. And lastly, HR professionals have to be great listeners, not only internally but also externally. Diagnostic skills are crucial, and the ability to assess what's happening within a company will help a company go a long way as it pertains to being innovative and ready for change.
Well, thank you, Shantanese. Your perspective, we can tell, has been very well prepared and enlightening.
Thank you.
And among our subject matter experts today, we have Michael Bowes, Vice President, HR Systems and Innovation at Equifax. You've been given us many takeaway thoughts today, Michael. Can you pull some key points together for our listeners in a few moments, please?
Sure, absolutely. I think as we move forward, we talked about data and analytics being key in the war for talent today. There are plenty of people around the globe that can work, but we're looking for specific skills to fit business-critical roles and positions in our organization. And so identifying that talent, attracting that talent, keeping that talent, those are all things that it's required for us to really understand about our workforce, and data and analytics is a big key there. The other takeaway for me in the day and age of industry that we're in is the self-service, the push for self-service in the marketplace requires that our technologies be extremely user experience friendly. They need to be intuitive. You need to have the opportunity to get in, get out, get things done quickly and correctly, and move on from those transactions. The other piece that's extremely critical for us right now is meeting those employees where they are. We have a lot of employees that are on the go all the time, our sales force, managers sitting in airports, riding in cabs, being in a hotel in Brazil or some other country. They need to be able to do their work, and so it's important for us to give them those mobile capabilities for the HR system so that those transactions, approving timesheets, completing reviews, handling talent assessments, that those don't get held up in the process. So I think those takeaways are the most critical for us right now in the industry that we're in.
All right. Masterfully done, Michael, and thank you. Well, thank you for that. Nancy, can you give us some final thoughts?
You know, all indications are telling us that we're at what looks to be the end of a prolonged economic slump, and it's easy for some companies to forget how difficult it can be to attract great talent when there are lots of people available and looking. But as a small growing company, we've always had to innovate to build our employment brand and attract and retain great people. So you've got an improving economy that's going to shrink the pool of available talent, and at the same time, you have recent college graduates entering the workforce who have very different notions of work-life balance and who are very passionate about doing meaningful work in an innovative setting. And in some cases, those attitudes are trickling up to your more experienced workers. So I do believe that less innovative companies are going to find themselves losing the good creative talent to companies that foster that innovation. So the competitive advantage, I think, is going to go to the companies that are more comfortable with taking informed risk on how you bring people in, who you bring in, and then how you treat them once they're on board. So the company is able to realize the reward of the great performance, the employee retention, and then ultimately financial success for the business.
Well, thank you, Nancy, for some great ideas and practical applications of an innovative company for the small to medium-sized company. I would like to thank you for rounding out our viewpoints here today, Nancy. We appreciate your time and appearance in the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
Lisa Gutierrez, may we have your summary thoughts, please?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. I think at the end of the day, diversity already is. Differences already exist. What's innovative and humbles me on a daily basis is trying to figure out how to do my work in a changing context. And everybody's talked about that. So, like, what I recommend is that, like any other business strategy, think about it, plan for it, and then execute it. Give it a go. Leverage your experiences from previous strategies and mirror that pattern. An example was, when I was at my previous organization, I asked the CEO, I said, give me an example of a strategy that you started from A to Z and you consider it, you know, one of the most successful strategies. He said it was, they had a tough time almost going out of business 1 year, and Six Sigma switched it, and it switched it within 5 years. And I said, when would you consider it like it's, you know, the cake is baked, it's frosted? He said, 8 years. I used that pattern from my D&I strategy there and just followed the Six Sigma pattern and used the same kind of components that he used to drive that globally among 50,000 people in 50 countries. So that was faster than what people typically think about D&I. It's going to take you 30 years, it's going to take you 40 years. Well, I'm just saying give it a go, because the next, after those 8 years, there's going to be another 8 years that's different. And at Cox, for example, we're going to be expanding. We're looking to expand. So that's going to be something that's going to be really exciting, but it also adds a layer of interest to how you do your business strategies. So give it a go.
All righty. Thank you very much, Lisa. Ladies and gentlemen, and all your thought-provoking points, and efforts to prepare for this talk is greatly appreciated. It has been great to have you in our studio today, and that brings us to our close of the Human Resources episode, addressing the topic of innovation and change in processes, with stimulating and illuminating discussion points presented by our thought leaders, Lisa Gutierrez from Cox Enterprises, and our guest speaker, Shantanese Reese from Georgia Tech Research Institute, and our guest speaker, Michael Bose from Equifax. We appreciate your contributions. Another guest speaker, subject matter expert, Nancy Lamborn from eVestments, and rounding out our show, Heather Laverne from Viendal Cave. Our thanks and participation to all of you for your support. There's been an honorable mention going out today to one of our authors, Heather Thompson, for her SME paper contribution entitled The Elasticity of Change, How to Endure and Maximize Transition in Your Organization. Thank you, Heather. And all of you making this show possible. And listeners, please vote for your favorite speaker, show, and author on the show tab, SME Awards, on the SME Showcase website at www.pilothouseadvisors.com. Listeners, don't forget, you can easily donate to any one of thousands of fabulous non-for-profits from one site, the Georgia Center for Nonprofits at www.gcn.org. All donations go instantly directly to the nonprofit of your choice. I've tried it. I'm hoping you will. We come now to the closing quote of our host. I would like to share a few of my major rules of life with you. Do more than look. Observe. Do more than think. Ponder. Do more than talk. Say something. Which is what all our subject matter experts have done today. This has been the SME Showcase of Atlanta Show, making thought leaders visible. And I am your host, Rio Orvac. Good day.
We hope you have enjoyed today's program. Please join us in our next Human Resources Show episode in March 2015, where we tackle the topic, employment testing, what is new, and what is practical. Also in March is our first Risk Compliance and Governance Show of the new year, introducing the episode Governance Today, loaded with executives from Atlanta's largest companies. And in the first quarter, we are introducing a new series by executive producer Heather Thompson, the CFO Roundtable Series, unveiling the rise and fall of accounting's newest enemy. Stay tuned for our full lineup of upcoming shows of this SME Showcase presenting executive producer Heather Thompson's Women in Leadership series. And in February, we are live on the floor at FinTech. In April, we feature the new show episodes, Marketing and Media, with the hot topic, The Digital Brand Advantage, Maximizing Impressions Among the Digital Noise, with co-host and media expert, Candace Haynes. For upcoming show announcements and auto notifications, please go to our website at www.pilothouseadvisors.com and select the show schedule tab.
We would like to thank the executive producer Heather Thompson, executive producer and host Rio Orvac, photographer Joseph Rivers, the business executive radio EXE, the wonderful hospitality of the City Club of Buckhead, production manager Everett James, production coordinator Whitney Adams, technical editor Robert Grant, and all of the guests in our studio audience.
Today's show was brought to you by Pilot House Advisors, piloting their organization to your vision by transforming, optimizing, and executing. This is a Business Executive Radio production. All rights reserved.